welcome to the Camp Constitution Report and Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard, of course, on Catching Fire News, but also WBCQ The Planet, shortwave radio every Monday and Thursday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And we have some great resources. In addition to our family camp, we have family weekend retreats, ladies weekend retreats, a publishing arm, a radio show, as of course, as you're listening or watching on catchingfire.news. And we do encourage you to subscribe to catchingfire.news, share, do not be selfish with this information, and share this as wide as you can. By the way, speaking of WBCQ, I had the chance to be up way up in Arista County, Maine to visit the station. My good friend, Pastor William Levy, is in the process of building a shortwave station in the South Sudan to advance his ministry down there. So I said, before you spend another penny, you need to go up to Northern Maine, or at least talk to Alan Weiner, who is the shortwave radio expert. And Alan's in Florida, but we went up, and Alan and his colleagues built the largest shortwave radio station in North America. And it's really in the middle of a very rural area in Arista County. So it's just fascinating to see this ridiculously high-tech entity. This antenna and the station cost about $20 million to build, and it's all around farmland, potato farms. Anyway, the other, I guess it was a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I was listening to or watching the Tamara Scott Show on Frank Speech. Tamara, I've not met her in person, but we sort of friends, online friends. I've been a guest on her show several times, and she was a recent guest on CatchingFire.news. And she had this lady, Rebecca Friedrich, a name that I was not familiar with. But listening to her, I said, she sounds like Sam Blumenfeld. And I reached out to her. Tamara was good enough to give me her email address. And come to find out that she was indeed a friend of Sam Blumenfeld. So, Rebecca, welcome to the show.
It is so wonderful to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I don't know Sam personally, never did. No. I have read his books. I am a big fan of Sam Blumenfeld.
Well, you know, when Sam, he would sometimes lament that he didn't think he had much of an impact. The schools were getting worse. The government seemed to be more powerful. I said, Sam, you don't know the influence that you have. Hundreds of thousands of people, not just in the United States, but around the world, have listened to your speeches, either on YouTube or the various news outlets. He wrote for a number of outlets, including the New American Magazine, News with Views, I think, and many others. And I pledged to him on his deathbed that his work would still influence generations yet unborn. And he's been dead 7 years now. And I like to believe that many people have used his Alpha Phonics with the young people who are 5 or 6 or 7 years old. And we created this. He passed away, as I mentioned, in May, of just a day after his 89th birthday. And we have, thanks to a couple of our talented people, our camp newspaper editor, Mark Affleck, and our webmaster, created this incredible archive, which is a free resource. But let's talk about you for a bit, because you have incredible work. You have a website called For Kids and Country. And tell us a little bit about your journey. You were a school teacher, and you kind of got red-pilled when it came to the unions many years ago.
Yes, so I was a public school teacher, and I was a student teacher in 1987. So I didn't have my own classroom yet, but I had an incredible master teacher. And every child in that first grade class was learning well and reading well, phonics. She taught, the district didn't have phonics, she paid for and brought in her own phonics. So I had the blessing of learning from her. But next door to us was a teacher that I witnessed every day abusing the little kids. She would grab them and shake them and scream in their little faces. First graders, you know, they came up to her waist. And so I asked my master teacher, you know, I said, I'm learning about reporting child abuse. I see some, but it's the teacher next door and I don't know what to do. And she sat me down and said, today's the day you learn about teachers' unions. She said they are not only defending that woman and protecting her job, the district can't get rid of her, but they're also spending teacher money on all kinds of radical far-left politics and sexual stuff. This is 1987. She already saw this.
Yeah.
And yeah, and so she educated me, and then I just dug in deeper and educated myself. And when I went to sign my first contract a few months later, the union came in and said, hey, you know, join the union. And I said, no, thank you. You allow teachers to abuse little children. I don't want to belong. And that's when I found out that I didn't have to join and be a member, but I had to accept their representation and I had to pay fees. And the difference between full dues and fees was only a few bucks a year. And so I became a non-member fee payer. And of course they bullied me, and I didn't get liability insurance, and I couldn't vote, and I wasn't invited to meetings. They're a total mafia. And but about halfway into my career, I decided, hey, I have to pay these people. I don't have a voice. They take away my insurance. I think I'm going to become a full member and become a union rep and get on the inside. So that's what I did. I was a rep for 3 years, and I served on the executive board of my local. And I'm so glad I did that, because it didn't matter what common sense idea I brought to the table, and all my teacher friends agreed with it, the union shot it down. And when I would go to state level meetings, or some of my friends would go to national level meetings, we were bullied. Some friends were spit upon, booed off the platform. Yeah. Every single thing we tried to do, I have friends that pushed against this radical sex ed years ago, like 20 years ago. And how were they treated? They were not only booed, but they were barred from serving on health committees. So what I was able to see with my own eyes is that real professional teachers who care about the children, who care about imparting knowledge and you know, morals and all the good things that our schools are supposed to be doing, are shot down by these wicked unions who call themselves teacher unions so that they can have legitimacy. But they are neither professional teachers, nor are they a real union in the traditional sense. You know, I love that Samuel Blumenfeld called them an education mafia. And it is my goal to get that term out there as much as possible, because that is exactly what they are. So in 2012, I really just felt called by the Lord to start writing editorials against them, because I kept reading editorials that they were so great in representing teachers, and that was a lie. So I started writing my own. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even know how to submit an editorial. I just did it in obedience. And miraculously, my little know-nothing editorials from my local newspaper end up getting picked up all over the nation and online outlets, because teachers don't say anything against the teacher unions because they're too scared. So I was an anomaly. So they got picked up. And literally within 6 months of my first editorial, I found myself serving as lead plaintiff in a federal lawsuit headed to the United States Supreme Court, suing the California Teachers Association and the National Education Association. Our goal was to end forced unionism in the United States of America, also to stop the collection of dues through paycheck deductions. It's a long story. When our case was heard at the U.S. Supreme Court in January 2016, exactly 1 month later, Justice Scalia died. And we knew we had his vote based on oral arguments. It was very obvious. He stated our points from the bench, and the other side admitted we were right during oral arguments. It was pretty amazing. Everyone knew we won 5-4, but as most people know, you have to wait for the decision to be written, and the decision isn't final until it comes down. Our case was one of the two largest cases of the session, ours and Little Sisters of the Poor, so we knew it would come down late in June. So we ended up getting a 4-4 split decision because of Scalia's death. But thankfully, after President Trump's win, and he put a conservative justice on the court, a friend of mine, Mark Janis, had built a case on our case. His case wasn't as thorough as ours. It wasn't going to stop the paycheck deductions, unfortunately, but it was to end forced unionism. His case was heard in 2018, and by God's grace, it won on my birthday. So we have freed every government employee in this country, including teachers, DMV employees, VA, Department of Ed, whatever you are. If you're a government employee, you don't have to pay unions anymore. So once that was finished, I wrote a book to help expose the unions through stories of teachers and other brave people. And also recently we released a movie to help people see the truth about the unions. And just every single day, I just work to get the truth out there so people will understand that this education mafia is 100% the only reason that our schools are corrupt, failing, wicked, that all this evil's going on in our schools. It's all the fault of the so-called teacher unions. So I'm grateful to you for helping me to get that message out today.
Well, I guess we have something, a few things in common. One of them being we both have Supreme Court cases. Ours was 9-0, thankfully.
Wow.
That was the Christian flag lawsuit, which against the city of Boston. And I'm here. I just got an article came out a couple of days ago that the city's about to actually deal with the settlement, not to us, but to our legal team, Liberty Counsel. So it should be over $1 million in
wow.
legal fees after 5 years. Yeah.
Congratulations to you,
you
and Matt Staver over at Liberty
yep.
Council. Good people.
Oh, yeah.
That's wonderful news.
They did it. They did an enormous amount of work. So, what's the name of your book? Can you have a copy of it that you can show everybody?
Yeah, you know, I think I have one sitting here. It's called Standing Up to Goliath, and the subtitle is Battling State and National Teachers Unions for the Heart and Soul of Our Kids and Country. And the local unions are often just as corrupt, but I was afraid teachers wouldn't read the book if I didn't delineate state and national, because most teachers hate the state and national unions. They know they're corrupt. They know that they're spending their money on politics, but they trust their local union. So that's how I came up with that subtitle. And also, you know, most teachers don't know they've been freed from the union, forced unionism. So that's another reason I wrote the book, is to help them to know that they've been freed.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't aware of the law or these decisions that uphold the law, and then they end up still complying with these things. And I think that's the case with Shurtleff v. Boston, but more and more towns are changing their policies. It's just been very interesting. Now, that, can people buy that book from your website?
They can find it on our website. We don't sell it personally.
Okay.
They can get it on Barnes & Noble online or Amazon online, but if they go to our website for kidsandcountry.org, there's little pictures of it they can click on. It will take them directly.
Okay, because I'd like to get a copy. Maybe I can get an autographed copy from you. How's that sound?
Absolutely.
All right,
we'll
do that. And I will definitely plug it. Now, Sam Blumenfeld wrote a book called The NEA, National Education Association, Trojan Horse in American Education. And he wrote that probably, I think, in the early 80s. And so it probably is something you probably use that for reference, I would hope.
You know, I got to tell you, I wish I would have known about that book in the 80s. Like I said, I started teaching a student teacher in 87, got my own classroom in 1988. How I wish I would have known all of the things that he exposed in that book, but I didn't. And sadly, I went to a Christian college. They never warned me about the unions. They never told me about Sam Blumenfeld. They didn't warn anybody. One of my big goals in life is, could we at least get our Christian colleges and their teacher education colleges to assign books like Sam Blumenfeld's or books like mine to warn these teachers, do not go in and fund these wicked unions? So I didn't learn about Samuel. I can't remember what year it was, but it was after I had already sued the unions. So our lawsuit was heard in 2016. I think I heard about Sam maybe 2014 or 15. And,
oh, really?
And I've already also read his Crimes of the Educators that he co-authored with Alex Newman. I love Alex Newman. He's so great. So glad he's keeping on that voice for himself and Samuel. But I think Samuel's book should be read by every single American, including every teacher, every parent. It's that important because people do not understand that our educational system used to be the greatest system in the world by design by our founders, who purposely kept the government out of our schools and who had an incredible classical liberal arts, including the phonics and, you know, Bible reading. And they've replaced it with this communist system on purpose, by design. And one of the things that Samuel helped people to understand, along with Flesch, I can't remember his first name right now, the guy
Rudolf
who wrote
Flesch.
Yes,
yeah, Rudolf
yes. Flesch, yeah. Why Johnny Can't Read and What You Do About It, is that the reason I call the education mafia, the so-called teacher unions, the reason why I'm not afraid to call them evil and wicked is because the things they do are evil and wicked. They're undermining our American free republic and our liberties and exchanging it for, you know, a real hard version of socialism that's really communism. But they also, by design, on purpose, destroyed the ability for Americans to read. So now we have these millions of Americans who are functional illiterates, and we have dyslexia all over the place, which we never had before. And it's all because of these so-called unions removing phonics and replacing it with the look say method, whole language, Dick and Jane, whatever you want to call it. And so it's so key that Samuel Blumenfeld covers all of these things in his book. I've read it twice. I carry it with me every time I travel a lot. Every time I travel, that book is in my backpack. Because if I have extra time on an airplane or anywhere, I read it more. Because there's so much rich information in there. And if people just understood what Samuel Blumenfeld has to share, we could fix our schools overnight.
Well, it's interesting. First off, if you go to our website, campconstitution.net, you'll see the Samuel Blumenfeld archives. And all we need is an email address and a username, and you have unlimited access, including a PDF of Crimes of the Educators that was a draft form of the book, but pretty much what you need. Because they are, I think they're out of print now. Hopefully they'll be put back in print. And you go to Amazon, they're not cheap. You've got to spend some money to get them. But it's such valuable information where I think they listed 8 or 9 things that these educators have done, which are considered crimes. And you brought on this deliberately dumbing down of America. I believe it was Sam who was one of the earliest people to say that back in the early 60s. A friend of his who was actually a Hall of Fame tennis star, an attorney, Watson Washburn, started a reading entity in New York City, Reading Reform, and asked Sam, who at that time was an editor of Grosset Dunlop, he edited the Hardy Boy and Nancy Drew books, and he actually got into trouble because he published a book, a Max Rafferty book, without the owner's permission. That got him fired. But anyway, that's when he was asked to join this entity, and he says, why? He said, reading is such a simple thing. All you need to do is you learn the vowel sounds, and then you learn the consonants put together, and you're a good reader. It's simple. And he said, you need to read Rudolf Fleisch's book, Why Johnny Can't Read, that came out in 1955. Sam actually became friends with Rudolf Fleisch. Their correspondence is up on that site. But Fleisch was actually a socialist from Vienna, even though I think he was an honorable man. There's a few. The honorable socialists have their conventions in phone booths these days, if you can find a phone booth. So he never worked with Sam on any project, but he went far beyond Fleisch's research. Fleisch talked about the Dick and Jane reader that was introduced by the Look Say Method people, but Sam goes back to John Dewey, and earlier than that, and that's when he realized that this was deliberate. I think Go ahead.
I was just going to say yes. Samuel helps people to understand that truly, if you count back to when the Union started in 1857, they've been trying to destroy us for 165 years. And Samuel goes through that whole history. And it's so remarkable when you understand it and when you grasp it for what it is. This wasn't on accident. This wasn't, maybe we can just try phonics, removing phonics, maybe it'll work. No, right away, teachers knew this wasn't working and kids weren't learning, but they pushed it anyway. It's very wicked. And did you say that Sam edited Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew?
Yes, he did,
Oh, my gosh. My husband's going to be thrilled. He's a huge Hardy Boy. We have the whole series.
Oh, really?
He read them all when he was a kid, yeah. Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah. Sam started his own publishing arm for several years, and he published a book called America Diva, Yankee Diva. It was a story of Lillian Nordica, who was the Taylor Swift of her day. She was an opera singer. And I had some artifacts that came from her estate that had been around for like 60 years. And one of them said, return to the Nordica homestead. And I thought, oh my goodness. So I went up there and I did return them. And they were so delighted. There were some of her handwritten letters and some of the, you call stereographs, those little, you put two pictures together and you look at it with a device and it looks like it's 3D. Yeah, those are some things like that. And so it was sort of very interesting, all the people that he knew. He was a friend of Ayn Rand, actually. Not really a friend. They were acquaintances. He said he wanted her to write a foreword to a book he was publishing through Gross and Dunlop. And he said that he met her, and he said that, well, at that time he was a sad atheist, but Ayn Rand was a militant atheist, which he didn't care for. But Sam eventually became a Christian.
Wow.
In fact, he was writing one of his first books on the history of education in the United States, and that brought him to the New England Calvinists, and that brought him to John Calvin, and he read Calvin's Institute, and at that point made a profession of faith. Interesting, some
Wow.
people just get a Bible tract and they read it. Okay, I'm convinced. Sam had to read like an 800-page tome by Calvin before he did. And
Wow. Wow.
Sam was very involved with the Chalcedon Foundation, which is based in California. He was became a good friend of Rush Dooney, Reverend Rush Dooney, who since passed away.
Wow. Wow, what an incredible history. Thank you for sharing. And it just shows you how important our classical education was. That whole Calvinist background, you know, that our children were getting doses of that every single day, that truth. And that's why we had such a moral society and we didn't have all these problems of people burning down buildings and filthy
That's right.
mouths and, you know, all these unwanted babies and divorces. We didn't have those problems before. And a big part of that is because our educational system was so outstanding and it included the morals and the ability to think and to read classics and things that were full of those morals. So people came out of school moral rather than now, you know, they're turning kids away from their parents, away from their faith. Our schools are really key to saving this country. So again, Samuel Blumenfeld, you know, his information's a big deal. We all need to learn it.
Let me ask you, and one of my pet peeves with people who are of like mind, that they somehow think that the public schools can be reformed. Sam Blumenfeld was dead against it. He said it can't be done. It's just too far gone. Now that can be a depressing thing, but on the other hand, if you could convince parents to get them out of the schools and start their own homeschooling or Christian schools or private schools, so what do you have to say to people that think that all they need to do is run for school committee member, which I don't discourage, by the way.
Right.
But so they still think that. Do you believe that they're salvageable at this point, the
Yeah.
government schools?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a somewhat long answer.
Well.
I do not think the public schools are salvageable. I do not think they can be saved unless we were able to make the unions illegal and kick out all of the special interests that they've brought into our schools. That's a huge, you know, leap. I mean, we'd have to kick out ACLU, Planned Parenthood, Southern Poverty Law Center, Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, the teacher unions, and the list goes on and on. There's hundreds of them. So if we could get all of them out and parents were in control again, we could fix the schools. However, our founders never meant for our schools to be public schools. That's something the unions did to us intentionally. They brought the federal government into our schools and federal tax dollars. And that was very much by design that we would not do that. Our founders didn't want our schools to be a disaster like they are today and full of politics and all this mess. So that's why they left government money out of it. But the education mafia was able to push and push and push and push. You know, my friend wrote a book called Socialists Don't Sleep. It's so true. That's the ed mafia. They just night and day pushed for what they wanted and they were able to get it. If you go back in history, and Sam's book is an easy way to do it. You go back in history and you discover our schools were great when they were small, when they were run by parents, when they were home schools, one room schoolhouses, you know, little what we today would call a co-op, the little dame schools. Our schools were outstanding. And, you know, pretty much every American could read. And there was no issue with poor kids because there was plenty of charity to
That's
take
right.
care of the poor children who couldn't afford it. What happened then, the government got involved. The government not only destroyed the curricula so that people are dumber now, but they are destroyed, you know, they've raised our taxes and they've destroyed everything. So now you have more poor people, you know, more charities needed, more people can't read, and it's all by design. And the sooner people realize it's by design, the sooner we can fix it. Our founders told us something. They said the only way to keep a free republic is with a well-educated,
Educated, that's right.
moral citizenry that can self-govern. Well, right now we're not well-educated, we're not moral, and that's why we're falling apart and tyrants are taking over. So our schools are just so key. So I agree with Sam, we cannot fix these public schools. I think the best gift we've been given in the last few years is the COVID nightmare. The whole
Yes,
thing was a
that's
nightmare. I
right.
call it the COVID cult. There's so many lies around it, but it woke people up to what's going on in our schools. It woke up teachers that I've been trying to wake up teachers for 35 years. They just didn't want to listen. Their heads were in the sand. And it woke up parents who didn't want to listen. All of a sudden, people realize, oh my goodness, our kids are being sexualized. They're being turned against their family through these so-called public schools. And all of a sudden you have, even I'm in California, we've had hundreds of thousands of people flee the public schools. They're starting co-ops, homeschools, one-room schoolhouses, independent learning academies, you name it. And we can help them with that, by the way. If they go to forkidsandcountry.org and click on school options, we can lead them to all the help they need to do that. So I'm hopeful and prayerful that more parents and good teachers will escape those, quote, public schools and do exactly as you say, start these smaller neighborhood schools. Pastors, let's open up your churches for schools. And the Independent Learning Academy model protects you from all the government baloney. So pastors are so key, churches are so key in this. We can do it, we can go back to what we used to have. It's just gonna be a lot of work.
Yes, you don't necessarily have to build schools from scratch. You have churches all over America. And in my travels, driving throughout New England and the Northeast, I'll go past a school, a church, let's say on a Tuesday, and it'll be a sign on them, and it will say Sunday service at 10, Wednesday Bible study at 7. Nothing else for the rest of the week. And they got to keep that building in the wintertime. If you live in the northern temperate zone like we do, you got to keep that place warm or the pipes will break. And in the summertime, you got to keep it at least reasonably cool. And today, the technology that we didn't have when I started home, my wife and I started homeschooling in the early 90s, or I should say mid-90s, we have it now. You have this online wonderful things like the Freedom Project, Freedom Project Education, which Alex Newman's involved with, where it's not just watching a video, but you're actually interacting with teachers and in a classroom format. And it's just so much easier today than it was back in those days. And then we have a lot of folks who are retired that are looking for things to do. Some people are engineers, some of them have some teaching skills. And sometimes, and my philosophy is the whole country is a classroom. And I grew up and lived in Boston. We are now in New Hampshire. But I thought, we're around so much history. So we visit a lot of museums, historical places, presidential homesteads, and so forth. And I like to say that my children are all there. My youngest just went off to Liberty University as a nursing student. Another one graduated last spring, and she got a job at Duke University Hospital before she graduated. And I have another one that should be running the company she works for. And my son is a leader in his church and just got a great job as a salesman. So they're doing pretty well. Homeschooling was a real plus for us. And I think you're correct about the COVID. There wasn't too many good things that came out of it, but one of them was indeed that many parents finally saw what was going on in their schools and said enough's enough. And so now the homeschool movement is flourishing, and it's really encouraging to see that. I think we lost Rebecca. Hope she can get back on, but I wanted to ask her about her schedule and where she travels and what group she speaks to. But her website's available there for, let's see if I can read it here, forkidsandcountry.org. And I encourage the viewers and listeners to pick up a copy of her book. On the radio side, when I put this up on Podomatic, I will use the cover of her book as the piece. So people, and I'll have a link underneath so people can get a hold. So yeah, we probably lost her for the next, we're almost few, we got a few more minutes left. But yeah, I did want to mention when I was up in Northern Maine with Pastor William Levy, it was about a 6-hour ride from here in New Hampshire to Arista County. Oh, there you go, here we go, you're back. Let me ask you.
My internet just died, so I hotspotted to my phone.
That's fine, it came out good. What is your schedule the next couple of months, or where are you speaking?
Oh gosh, I actually get 2 weeks of no travel, but I'm doing some local things. This Saturday, I'll be speaking in Yucaipa, California at a parents' event, and they'll be showing our movie. And then next Saturday, I'll be speaking at a TPUSA. They're working with a local revival group in San Diego. That's on Saturday, I think it's the 29th Saturday. I was just in Minnesota and Dallas, but I get a little break for the holidays. I will be up in Washington State, speaking to Women of Washington in November. I think it's the 9th or something like that. And that's all I can remember off the top of my head. So,
no, that's great. So you get the word out and get around. Tell us a little. We have about 2 minutes left, I think. Let me check the time. Yeah, well, tell us a little about your movie. You said you got out.
Yes. Well, when I wrote my book, Standing Up to Goliath, you know, it's all testimonies of brave teachers and some parents and some kids and myself. And what we discovered was, sadly, thanks to our public school system, a lot of people don't like to read anymore. So a lot of people bought the book and read, but we wanted to reach a broader audience. So we decided to kind of pick up where the book left off and create a movie. And so we made a movie called Whose Children Are They? And it also has testimonies. Some of them are from the book. Some of them are new testimonies. And the movie just does the same thing. Alex Newman's in it. We expose the John Dewey and the communist roots of the teacher unions and, you know, and how they destroyed our educational system and started the Federal Department of Education and all of that. And we talk about the critical race theory and the sex ed, and we help people to connect the dots that it's the so-called teacher unions, the education mafia, that's behind all of this. So so that's what the movie is out there for, and people can find it. They can actually find it from our website, for kidsandcountry.org, or they can find it at whosechildrenarethey.com.
Can that be live streamed?
Yes, it can. It can be streamed, excellent. And it's also on DVD now.
I don't mean live streamed. That's it, yeah.
Yes, they can good. Stream it, and it's also on DVD. They can get it on My Store, Mike Lindell's, mystore.com. The movie just went up there in DVD, and it's also, they can find it at whosechildrenarethey.com.
Great. And what is your website again?
Our website is forkidsandcountry.org.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you for being a guest today. And I do encourage the viewers and listeners to pick up these this important DVD or stream it. In fact, it'd be a great thing to show to your Bible study, your homeschool group, preferably groups that don't know a whole lot about this. So we're going to be using it in our learning center in Lexington, Massachusetts. So
excellent. And the only thing I would warn people is that movie is not appropriate for children, because we're exposing what they're teaching your children in the public schools.
Sure.
So don't let kids watch it.
All right. Well, thank you for being a guest. And folks, you've been listening to the Camp Constitution Report on catchingfire.news and the Camp Constitution Radio on WBCQ The Planet. And until next week, may God richly bless you.